All right, everyone, welcome back. Ready for another deep dive? Today we're going to be tackling something pretty interesting, an online article. It's called Unveiling Two Chronicles, A Skeptic's Exploration.
Sounds intriguing.
Yeah. And instead of the usual, you know, taking it from a purely religious angle, we're going to be looking at it from a historical and critical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So get ready for some really surprising stuff about Solomon's wealth and the whole, you know, the good kings and bad kings thing, and even
conflicts with science.
Oh, yeah, that too. And maybe even a little peek into what the author's real agenda might have been.
I'm ready. Let's dive in.
So Two Chronicles, it really zeroes in on these kings of Judah. It all starts with Solomon and the building of the first temple in Jerusalem. Like, that's the foundation of the whole book, you know?
Yeah, it sets the stage for everything that comes after. And speaking of Solomon, the book really plays up his wealth and wisdom. But how much of that is actually, you know, historically accurate?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Was Solomon really as wise and rich as they say he was?
Well, historians have been debating that one for ages. The Bible goes on and on about his riches and trade networks, but the archaeological evidence is kind of iffy on that. Like, we haven't really found anything that truly backs up those claims.
So maybe it's more symbolic than literal, like a way to show God's blessings on the faithful.
Could be. Some scholars definitely think that the kingdom's wealth during Solomon's reign might have been, let's say, embellished for theological reasons.
That makes sense. It's like they're using his story to make a point. And that kind of makes you think about all the other kings in Two Chronicles, too.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes to that whole good king versus bad king thing. Like, it's so black and white, you know?
Totally. But when you look closer, it gets way more complicated. Take Hezekiah, for example. He's always praised for his religious reforms. But, like, yeah, he got rid of all those altars to other gods and made everyone worship at the temple in Jerusalem. But he also went around destroying all these sacred sites and artifacts.
And, like, by today's standards, that's pretty intolerant.
Right. So even the good kings had their issues.
Yeah. It really makes you think about how our ideas of morality have changed over time. It's a totally different perspective.
Yeah.
And then you've got King Manasseh, who starts out, you know, as a real tyrant.
Ah, Manasseh. He's a prime example of the whole repentance theme that runs through the book. He's promoting pagan worship, even sacrifices his own children, but then, bam, he has this big change of heart, repents, turns back to God. And according to Two Chronicles, God totally forgives him.
It's a powerful story.
Yeah.
But it does make you wonder about divine justice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah, he repented, but his actions had some serious consequences.
Definitely. It raises the question, can repentance truly erase past deeds? It was a common idea in ancient Near Eastern thought, but it's something we still grapple with today.
It's a big question. How do we balance forgiveness with the lasting impact of our actions? Something to think about for sure. Okay, so moving on. One thing that really jumps out in Two Chronicles is how it links natural events to, well, divine intervention.
Oh, absolutely. Like the story of King Uzziah. He gets struck with leprosy after trying to perform priestly duties, which was a big no-no. The text frames it as divine punishment.
Right. But nowadays we understand leprosy is a disease, a contagious one.
Exactly. It's a medical issue with complex causes.
So it's like their worldview was totally different. They saw the divine in everything. But we tend to separate the natural and the supernatural.
It highlights how much human understanding has evolved, right?
Totally. It's not just about historical context. It's about how our knowledge has changed. Speaking of different perspectives, we should also consider, you know, the author's potential bias.
Oh, for sure. It's crucial to remember Two Chronicles wasn't meant to be a neutral history book.
Right. It was written after the Babylonian exile. Like, that was a traumatic time for the people of Judah.
Exactly. So the author was probably trying to give them hope. You know, remind them of their history and encourage them to stay faithful to God.
So we have to read it with that context in mind.
Absolutely. It's like every historical text, especially a religious one, is going to have the author's viewpoint woven in. It's up to us to read it critically and think about the influences behind the narrative.
Makes sense.
And by understanding that historical context and the author's possible motivations, we get this amazing insight into the beliefs and anxieties of that time. Two Chronicles becomes more than just a religious text. It's like a window into this specific period of Jewish history.
So, yeah, we might not always agree with the perspective, but we can still appreciate what it offers.
Yeah.
Right? All these fascinating stories and moral dilemmas.
For sure.
It reminds us that history isn't black and white, and that even these ancient texts can give us new perspectives on who we are and how we see the world. You know, it makes you wonder, How do these ancient beliefs and practices, like the idea of repentance and divine intervention, shape our own understanding of morality and justice today?
Mm-hmm.
Something to ponder, right?
Definitely. It's a question that bridges the gap between the past and the present.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. It's been a fascinating exploration. And hey, until next time, keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep those minds open.
See you next time.